Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. On this episode today, I have a very special guest who is a friend and a colleague of mine, Dr. Lacey Chiddle. And she is the practitioner, or should I say Lacey or Dr. Chiddle is the practitioner who helped me at the beginning stages of my own fatigue recovery journey. We met long ago at a functional medicine conference in Miami and instantly connected and have been friends for a long time, which is why as soon as I knew that I needed support in my healing journey, she was the first and only person I felt that I could reach out to. So this is a wonderful episode where we just really chat and discuss all sorts of things that are health related. And Lacey shares a little bit of her own story as well. Lacey is a self-proclaimed canary in a coal mine. And she says, "I will be the first one to drop." Nearly overnight, she went from counting calories, running 50 miles a week, and training others to be in the best shape of their life, to someone who was unable to keep food down, weight on, or walk more than a block without needing to rest, with no apparent explanation. She was officially a square peg in a round hole, as no diagnosis fit her, despite seeing some of the country's best physicians, and she's based in the US. However, as luck would have it, she was the best person and very well equipped to go through this healing journey. She has a BS in exercise biology with an emphasis on nutrition. She has a doctorate of physical therapy, and she has 2 internships in neurology and extensive continuing education in many, many things, much like myself. To deepen her understanding of how to help herself and others regain their health, she has completed all 7 advanced practice modules with the Institute of Functional Medicine, the IFM. And IFM is the leading authority on functional medicine. And this is where we both met in Miami when we were both doing the gut health module. Lacey has an unwavering conviction in the body's ability to heal, a deep understanding of how to achieve this, and the empathy of a survivor. Lacey truly is the solution that modern medicine has been begging for. So please enjoy this conversation with the wonderful Dr. Lacey Chiddle. Hello, everyone. I'm here with my lovely friend, Dr. Lacey Chiddle. And I'm going to call you Lacey, not Dr. Chiddle, if that's okay.
Absolutely. It'd be weird if you called me Dr. Chiddle.
But Dr. Chiddle, Lacey, was my practitioner who played a very big role in helping me in my own fatigue recovery journey. But we had a friendship before Lacey helped me and became my practitioner. And so I've asked Lacey to be on the show today just because she's wonderful and just has so much to share and so much wisdom. And I thought it would be really helpful just to for us to have a conversation. We had a WhatsApp chat a few weeks ago because I think we knew if we just booked a schedule to record a podcast, we just want to talk about everything and anything and not actually record a podcast. But it's a shame because we had such beautiful conversations when we were talking in our pre-chat that we should have actually recorded and had on the podcast. So I'm hoping that this conversation today is going to bring up some more inspiring discussions, at least. But Lacey, I might just start by saying how we met, which I was calculating before we jumped on the call was, I think, pretty much almost 9 years ago to the day. It was the beginning of November 2014. Yep. And I was in Miami and you were in Miami and we were both attending the functional medicine gastrointestinal health module. And my friend Jack had been started the IFM training and he had encouraged me to do the training and sort of bullied me into going over to Miami. It was my first time in America. And
I didn't know that.
It's so interesting, like how we met, because I decided to do a room share as part of that training to save a little bit of money on the hotel fees, which as an introvert is a really big deal.
It's a challenge.
And, and we ended up going out for dinner. I would probably not have gone out for dinner with anyone, but because my roommate was like, "Oh, I'm going out for dinner with these people," I decided to go.
and you were there. And we just kind of like connected a little bit. I think we started following each other on social media. And it does almost feel like a little bit of like one of those divine moments. And I think of all the other times I've traveled for training and stuff, I'm usually quite isolated and quite introverted. I'm also very jet lagged, so I wouldn't go out for like a late dinner mid-conference, but it just seems like it was meant to be that I was meant to meet you and you were meant to help me on my own journey. So I just wanted to share that little anecdote and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you and have a conversation. I have to comment though, when we first met, because, my impression of impression of meeting you, so I think both of us have evolved so much where it's like barely like that I'm the same person or that you're the same person. Like we are obviously, but also it was just such a different chapter in our lives. You know, I was in this point where I was kind of like faking it, until I make it sort of thing, where I was still struggling with my fatigue and, health problems and everything. And then just kind of like, just go, 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 get it done, make connections, do the thing so that, I can hopefully create something in the future. And then I meet this beautiful, strong, inspired woman. And I'm like, I want to make friends with her. it's that easy. Cause when you meet someone, you're just like, oh, I need that kind of energy in my life and stuff. And so for me, I was very much doing, like you said, just kind of going outside of myself, not doing what is normal for me either. Boy, it pays off to kind of make yourself a little bit uncomfortable and stuff, and have those sort of, like you said, a divine intervention where you get to meet somebody who you're going to stay connected with for many, many years to come. So it's been a pleasure to be friends with you and to be a little bit of a help here and there in your own journey of recovery as well.
Yeah, I mean, 9 years, and we have only ever actually met in person once. See, it's quite beautiful. And on that note as well, I think I told this on a previous podcast where I interviewed you, but I remember being in the conference room and you walked across and I just noticed you. And in like the romantic kind of sense, like sometimes you might notice like a man maybe, and there's like a romantic interest there. Obviously I'm married now, but in my dating days, and it was almost like that same kind of like you just notice someone and you feel something, and then it mm-hmm. We just ended up at the same dinner table, which neither of us in our normal lives today would probably have been at. And there's was clearly something there. And we caught up recently on the phone, and I was saying to you like how, and maybe we'll talk about this in a moment, about how this chronic illness journey can be quite lonely. But at the same time, I have so many amazing people in my life. They just happen to be all over the world, which I just want to go for a coffee on a Saturday morning. But yeah, it does feel like a really special connection.
Absolutely.
And so you have a health journey that you've been on, and you mentioned that briefly. So do you want to tell people a little bit more about you and how you got to the work that you're doing now? And I know it's potentially a loaded question. There's so much to share.
Yeah. Well, you can certainly go back and listen to the other podcast from a number of years back. So I'll keep it pretty brief. But, how I came to this work was from my own health journey. And so when I finished my doctorate in physical therapy, and I had been a personal fitness trainer, and I was moving to start my career, I started to have little hints that my body was just not able to keep up anymore. My energy was getting less robust, to be able to work out the way I was. I got sick and then just had to take antibiotics and never really recovered from that. And then fast forward, half a year later, I have shingles around my left eye and had chronic nerve pain and nerve damage around my left eye and cheek, forehead. And then keep pushing my life and try to do all the things and keep up with everything despite having chronic pain, some gastrointestinal issues and whatnot. And then I was at work and I was in a meeting and I stood up and I lost vision out of my left eye. I had a visual field cut. So there was a blood vessel that was occluded in my eye, and very, very scary. And the conclusion of that was that I had some vasculitis, vasculopathy, that then started to that condition, it's an inflammation of your blood vessels, and that would go ahead and attack various portions of my body. So it'd attack my heart or my kidneys, my gastrointestinal tract, and I would have symptoms of that. So then I had the $1 million workup, went to the NIH and Hopkins and University of Maryland and saw all these wonderful, wonderful doctors, you know, and long story short, they decided that it probably is an emerging autoimmune condition. And they named it seronegative undifferentiated connective tissue disease. That it means that my blood labs don't line up to it, but all my symptoms do. And this is a connective tissue disease. Some doctors thought it might be lupus, but here I am all these years later. So it's about, you know, 12 years later, and I don't have a classical autoimmune disease. So how did I get here? How did I not become part of that statistic of, you know, of that? So usually what happens is that after you start to go down that route of autoimmunity, the blood markers will become evident within about 5 years. So I remember getting to the 5 year mark and, you know, my antibodies, you know, for lupus and whatnot did not progress. And then, you know, to some extent, of course, it felt like, oh, I've kind of like won to a certain degree, even though, you know, everything maybe wasn't necessarily perfect, that I was able to ward off the progression of autoimmune disease. But what happened was, is that all these medications that I was taking, they all had side effects. And, you know, one thing that you know, take one medicine for chronic pain, it messes with your gut and your memory. And you take another medication for your gut, but, you know, it doesn't fix the problem. It creates, you know, or that you still have the side effects of having dysbiosis or having improper motility. And that's things like joint pain and muscle aches, brain fog. So, and then my fatigue was just quite severe. So then I was given a medication, a stimulant for that, you know, just so I could be functional and get out of bed. So, you know, I went to all these doctors, had this $1 million workup, you know, was told by my rheumatologist, I'm very lucky that, you know, I have progressed and gotten as well as I have, you know, and whatnot, but I still wasn't able to live my life normally, exercise and like go have fun with friends and not pay for it for 3 days afterward, all that sort of stuff. And so I spent a lot of money and a lot of time working with other practitioners and, you know, with the promises that it's going to get better. And things got marginally better for a period of time, but it didn't ever stick. And so then I decided that no one would ever be as invested in my care as much as I would be. So that's when I went and started taking the classes with the Institute for Functional Medicine and started, you know, treating myself. And that's where obviously I met Anna and whatnot. But the culmination of that was is that I once I knew all that stuff, I had to practice differently. So then I had to figure out how I was going to turn practice from being, you know, a physical therapist into something that, you know, incorporated the whole body and the mind and your lifestyle and all the things, the nutrition that are absolutely critical to achieve like any, you know, goal. And so that's what I do now.
Yeah. And for some of our US clients will probably recognize your name because you also help me with my US clients ordering tests and put some bottle fillers in your US clients. So in fact, you're listening to this and you're a US client of ours, then this is the voice behind the name that you may see on some of your papers. So thank you also for all your help with that, Lacey. I really, really appreciate that. And what I'd love to kind of dig into a little bit is, you know, there's, I think, a lot of people who do have autoimmunity who listen to this podcast, and maybe mm-hmm. we'll also talk in a moment about putting yourself into a box. But what was helpful in your own journey? As you said, you were taking all these medications, which had side effects, and then you were taking medications for the side effects. And I assume you got off some of those medications, you improved your quality of life. So what did that process look like for you?
Well, number one, not linear and very lengthy, you know. Anna and I were talking about, you know, how long did it really take to feel like you had gotten to a point where, you know, you were, quote, better, like, you know, feeling like you're living your life again. And, you know, I would say it took about 2 years to feel like, you know, I was able to engage in my life the way that I really felt like you know, I was able to be myself and not have, like, you know, big setbacks anymore. So, you know, it was a big process. And for me, you know, I went from being, you know, on the couch most of the day or in the bed most of the day and needing to titrate my activity. Like, if the one activity today is showering, today the activity is showering. And if today the day is cooking, it's cooking in little bouts where I stand up for a few minutes, or, you know, I do the cutting from a seat, from a seated position, you know. So, like, my level of dysfunction was pretty significant. You know, it was a big deal when I could walk the half block to get to the coffee shop, you know, at the end of the block. And then that's it. That was it for my physical activity. Go to the grocery store and, you know, lie down in the parking lot, you know, for a few minutes before I go into the grocery store to get the things, and then lie down again before I drive myself home. I was very limited. So for me, getting to the point where I could exercise and not have post-exertional malaise took quite some time. And exercise has always been a big part of my life, and so very important to me to get to that point again. But one of the things that I had to do in order to get to that point too was step outside of who I was, you know, kind of setting aside, like, the expectations of what I should be able to achieve. And as a physical therapist and, you know, a personal fitness trainer, like, I have, you know, ideas of what somebody should progress, at what rate they should progress. So, you know, it's a totally different animal, though, when you have, you know, chronic fatigue. And so I had to use tools to help and different techniques than I had ever utilized before. So when I first went back to physical activity, I chose sports that I'd never done before, or activity I'd never done before. So that I didn't have a memory of what I should be able to do. So I did yoga and I did Pilates and I did walking, but weight training and running, which are my, you know, go-to favorite sports, I just didn't do. Oh, I did ballet as well. And second, so I did those sort of things so that I wouldn't, you know, overdo it and, you know, beat myself up and have that, like, you know, roped, you know, dialogue with myself of that, you know, how pathetic I am. And, you know, I can't believe I'm not making this progress and all those sort of bad things that, like, every single cell in your body is listening to. And I think that's one of the big, you know, things that I shifted in my thinking in my recovery was that I really needed to create an environment, not just outside of me, but inside of me that was supportive. And, you know, we learn this, you know, through our functional medicine training, is that, like, every cell in your body is listening. And so if there is a cell danger response because you have a gut infection, because you have an autoimmune response happening and you're making autoantibodies, that same cell danger response is also being perpetuated by what you're thinking about yourself. So until you can actually shift that internal dialogue, it's very hard to maintain progress. So I had to create that sort of environment internally and externally, and with the ways that I approached, you know, everything from cooking to physical activity, you know, in order to make that progress stick and stick around long term. And then another, like, tool that I used, because I was an early adopter to things like the Oura Ring and to blood sugar monitoring and continuous glucose monitoring, because those things give you objective data. And, you know, I know a lot of the people who follow you as well, Anna, you know, are type A's, you know, we are our worst critics. And so we think to ourselves, you know, like, but I'm eating perfectly, but, you know, I'm prioritizing stress management, but, you know, you know, why is it still happening to me? So when you can get that objective measurement through, you know, your Oura data that, you know, maybe what's happening, you know, it's like one of the things that happened to you is you had parasympathetic overdrive, right? So then, like, your HRV looks great, your heart rate looks great and stuff like that, but maybe it looks inflated because your body's saying, shut it down, go rest. Yeah. And so
you have that from the hard way.
Yeah. So, you know, like, that, those sort of things are then, like, eye-opening and saying, oh my gosh, like, this is, how is it that, you know, I'm doing this, I feel worse when my HRV is higher. Well, that's the thing. That's, you know, parasympathetic overdrive. That's a body trying to protect itself, as it always is, you know, or the blood sugar monitoring and stuff. You know, I can't tell you, you know, how emotional stress can just like bump up your blood sugar on that continuous glucose monitor and stuff. And you don't feel like it's just anything more than a normal day, you know, normal stressors. I've had people tell me, oh my gosh, my blood sugar went up to 160 just driving in traffic. And the traffic wasn't even bad, you know. But, you know, and it's driving is stressful. It can be stressful for someone. So it's like all of those sort of things like that for me were also like critical tools to kind of give me that objective data to allow me to get out of my own way.
Yeah. And I think when we worked together, the blood sugar was so helpful because I was exercising. Okay, granted, by the time we worked together, I wasn't really exercising anymore, but I was still able to do some yoga and I thought I had a healthy diet. And you were like, you should just check your blood glucose. And then I remember I had like a little spreadsheet and I used to put all my meals and my glucose and send it to you. And you were like, yeah, this is not good. So, and I still actually, as we're talking here, I have my Keto Mojo sitting on my desk. I don't measure it all the time anymore, but I'm still checking on myself and keeping an eye on that because personally, I do find it something that's really, really useful.
Absolutely. And we're always changing. Our life is changing. Our hormones are changing. We are aging. Even when we've got everything dialed in, you know, things change. So like having those sort of check-ins and humility around it too, I think is like really important. You know, it's really easy, I think, for anyone, you know, but, you know, I definitely did this quite a bit of just, you know, thinking that it should go faster and that, you know, that there should be like, you know, some sort of like points at which, you know, like it should not have all of these back steps or that it should be more linear and whatnot. And because there's so many components that can affect the progress, it can sometimes be like really difficult to see what those little things are and then not to beat yourself up for it too. So I think, you know, like I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be that reflection point for you, you know, in the past and stuff. And I know, you know, for myself, that has certainly been the things that had kept me back from being able to maintain my health, you know, and through all the ups and downs of things like giving myself SIBO 3 times over because I was not giving myself enough time, you know, with the protocol or with the, you know, dietary changes and all the things like that. And then beating myself up about it, you know, I can laugh about it now, but shoot, that was challenging at the time.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, you speak about, you know, having that reflection point. And I think that's where having someone outside of you to can help you look at the situation a little bit more objectively can be really helpful. I also remember like we'd probably only been working together a very, very short space of time. And I was like, oh, I feel like awful or whatever. And then fortunately, I had my data that I was keeping on my little spreadsheet, which I was sending to you. And we had a call and we went through it together. And you're like, look, you've had a period. This has happened. That has happened. That has happened. Maybe you just need to rest a little bit more. And it wasn't like I needed a new protocol or a magic supplement or anything like that. You're like, you're just giving yourself a hard time and you need to slow down a little bit. And sometimes that's exactly what we need to hear.
Yeah. I think the other part about the slowing down thing is that we were talking about, you know, the ego kind of getting in the way of that, right? And, you know, recognizing that this is our 3D self, you know, that is thinking that there's a particular timeline that this needs to happen on, you know? And we all probably grew up with some ideas of what we'd achieve, you know, in our lives at these different stages and what we'd be doing and how much money or, you know, being in a relationship or having children or all the different things. And then life happens, you know, you get sick and then it feels like you've lost like years of your life to being ill. And so now you know, you find a little, and then you get inspired by, oh my gosh, I'm getting a little bit better. But then, you know, a back step happens, you know, life happens. You have a couple bad nights of sleep or whatever the thing happens to be. You eat something that upsets your stomach. And it's so easy to just spiral into this, like, you know, I'm never going to get better. You know, I'm never going to be able to live my life. I can't believe all the time that I've lost and all the things. And I think the perspective, you know, was coming back to just recognizing that that's just like, that's just your ego. That's you know, trying to remind, that's trying to derail you, that if you can separate, you know, yourself from that, if you can actually step outside of that and actually recognize that your spiritual journey doesn't have a timeline, you know, that that can actually really help you move through those challenging times a bit more easily, which is, you know, part of it, like the work that you do too with nervous system too.
Yeah. And I was just thinking what you said about like the spirit soul journey is like, that's happening all the time. Like your spirit and your soul is evolving and growing. And, you know, even in those moments where you feel like on a human level, like nothing is happening, there can sometimes be so much happening below the surface. And I think that's why I really like the somatic work as well, is because we can get up in our heads a lot and we can disconnect from it all. But just coming like into the body more and experiencing more, I think it's just enables that softness to come through the body, and then we can let go of the ego parts a little bit more.
Absolutely. Yep.
And there was actually like a question I wanted to ask you. I didn't send this one to you to prepare for, but I was just curious of your professional opinion, just when it comes to autoimmunity, because like autoimmunity can often be a lot more complex, or perhaps is a lot more complex than some other fatigue related conditions. So I was just curious, from your practical experience, do you see that with autoimmune clients, that there can be a lot more forwards and backwards, or the progression might be a little bit more slow, or do you find that it doesn't actually make a difference what the condition is, shall we say, what the diagnosis is?
Well, that's a really good question. Well, I'd probably say that it really doesn't necessarily matter what the condition is. It can certainly go back and forth. I mean, even you take like diabetes and stuff, you know, or you take heart disease and stuff like that. There are genetic reasons why people are predisposed to that. And then, you know, their epigenetic phenomenon that turn those things on. And that's our lifestyle. That's the dialogue in our head. That's the past traumas that we may or may not have processed. Autoimmunity is the same. You know, is that, you know, the wonderful resources, you know, Garber Mate, you know, on trauma and its effect on, you know, physical health and stuff. He talks about that in his books, but a lot of, you know, other practitioners do too. But the point being is that, you know, I think that if you, whatever your predisposition is, whether it's autoimmunity or if it's one of these other types of diseases, it's both genes and environment. And so it's what you're eating, it's how you're sleeping, it's how you're caring for your body or not, but it's also, you know, can be your childhood, it can be your interactions, you know, or, you know, in utero, it can be, you know, that whole milieu. Some people actually believe, you know, and you can actually see if this resonates with you too, but if it can also go back generations, you know, because you were in your grandmother, you know, the egg that turned into you was in your grandmother. So maybe that intergenerational trauma is something that you adopted from something you don't have any memory of because you didn't actually exist, you know, yet. You know, so I think that there's a lot there to potentially unpack that leads to the development of autoimmunity. But in terms of then the progression of the disease and or the wobbliness of the progression, I would say, I would say that, you know, it really has to depend on how much of that is being then addressed as well. I think the pattern, maybe more so that I see in individuals who struggle the most, there is a vein of trauma, you know, that has not been addressed. There, you know, and that can be little T or big T. It doesn't have to be something that anyone in the world would consider a trauma. It can be something that's very small, but it was just your perception of the situation at the time, you know, when you're a child and, you know, you didn't feel safe, you know, or somebody, you know, was late picking you up. That can be like a little trauma, you know, in your body that then you hold on to, and it manifests over time, over a lifetime of conditioning. But that's, I would say that's more of the pattern, is that generally speaking, when folks make progress, but then fall back into old patterns, or make progress and then fall back in terms of their symptoms. Is that there's more emotionally that needs to be addressed, nervous system wise that needs to be addressed. And that's what's keeping them from making more linear progress or maintaining their progress. And that's why I always say to even my clients when we work together, And that, you know, we're learning the tools and the blueprint to your, you know, unique physiology, you know, what are your genetic predispositions? What has been going on and healing? What nutrients and things that your body needs, or detoxifying or balancing microbiome? We do all of that stuff. But, it, you know, long term, I say to people, it's like, you have all these tools now, but that doesn't mean that life isn't going to happen, right? So that's why then people might get really healthy. And then 2 years later, they come back because somebody died or because they're a new parent and they went without sleep for the last year, you know, and these things then can bring back out your whatever your unique, you know, propensity towards a certain disease is. And then so then we have to take a look at it and identify, okay, is it nutrient based? Is it microbiome based? Is it toxicity based? Address those things, but then ask that very important question as to like, why were you, you know, triggered this time? You know, what's different about this time? Is there a pattern here that correlates to some sort of self-concept that you haven't quite worked through yet?
That's a very beautiful answer. And I did tell Lacey we were going to go a little bit off script, so I'm just going to fire some more unprepared questions.
Let's keep that. Let's do it.
There's like a big kind of like, I guess, dichotomy. I don't know if that's the right word in the sort of like healing space, shall we call it, where some people are like, it's all mind body, you know, functional medicine doesn't work. And then maybe some people are, I think there's less of a people who are like functional medicine only. Usually a lot of the functional medicine supporters are like, and we need the trauma work as well, because that's the way that we're trained. So I'm curious, just your professional opinion. Do you think that some conditions are mind-body only? Or do you think it varies from person to person? What's your opinion on all of that?
I think that we are fabulously complex as humans. And there is no one thing that is going on in this amazing body that is just emotional, spiritual, and there's not just something that is purely physiologic. Mind, body, and spirit, they all are interacting constantly all day, all night, while you're awake, while you're asleep. They're always going to be affecting your perception of how your brain works, how what you're thinking about, how you're physiologically functioning. Absolutely. It's never one or the other. It's always both.
Yeah, I love that answer. I support your answer. But something we did touch on when we had our pre-chat was this idea of attaching to your diagnosis and versus just staying curious. And I do see, it's important if you're unwell to see your doctor, have all the tests done. They need to rule things in. They need to rule things out. That's all an essential part of the process. But I think sometimes people can like, sort of pigeonhole themselves into a diagnosis if they receive one, or almost put their healing on pause until they receive a diagnosis, and then they can be in this like limbo land for a long period of time. So I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Oh, I'd love to. I'll do it both from personal experience and then also from working for the last decade in this space. So for me personally, you know, I went to school and I was very much, you know, indoctrinated to a certain extent that like, if you get a diagnosis, then we can have a proper treatment protocol that's going to help, you know, fix you, so to speak. And then I did that and I realized, oh, wait a second, it doesn't work that way. A diagnosis doesn't necessarily mean cure. It usually, and you know, the allopathic world means symptom management, usually. And so that's what, you know, actually brought me to say, it's got to be something better. You know, there's got to be more to this. And so then that was why the framework with the Institute for Functional Medicine really spoke to me, because then it was like, you know, systems based. It was based on stuff that made sense to me, you know, as, you know, doctor of physical therapy, as somebody who knows the how the body functions system wise, that, you know, it would make sense that your body is just trying to heal itself, but something is not right. Either there's something in over too much of it, or there is something in insufficiency that is not functioning. So, you know, then identifying what are the pieces of the puzzle the body needs in order to go ahead and finish that process made sense. So the diagnosis, you know, to a certain extent, I was really grateful that I was kind of in this in-between space after I got over being really sad about it. and realizing that that was not going to lead to like me getting better, having a diagnosis. And then I realized a couple of years in, you know, maybe this was the best thing that ever happened to me, because then, you know, if I could stay in this in-between space, then it helped cultivate hope. And then also from working with other, you know, doctors, is that when you are diagnosed, and I've seen this repeatedly over the years, is that once you are diagnosed with something, it's very hard to get people to look at you again and think that maybe that diagnosis was wrong, or maybe you can actually cure that thing, or not cure it, but put it into remission, right? So, you know, I've worked with a number of people over the years whose antibodies for Hashimoto's, you know, disappear, or Graves disappear. And, you know, that is supposedly not, doesn't happen to people that have autoimmunity, you know, to the actual antibodies go into remission, right? And then so to try and get a doctor to say, oh, you don't need that medicine anymore. And so, well, why would you need a medicine if you don't actually have the disease presenting itself? So it can be very difficult in the allopathic model to then get the support for, you know, changing medications or getting a second opinion. You have to, or having people to look at your diagnosis and say, well, maybe it's something else. Maybe there's more that we can do about it. So I think from the practitioner standpoint, it can be very frustrating, in that it's really important to find team members and or that support you in that, and or to not stop. You know, if you found a rheumatologist that was helpful for a certain amount of time, but now that you're getting better, like they are not willing to kind of look at things differently or retest things, then just go find someone else. Just try a new doctor. You don't have to always stick with the same one just because you saw them historically. And then from the curiosity standpoint for yourself is just, you know, I think it's really, it was very helpful for me, and I've seen it be useful for other people for that that cellular knowing, you know, back to that like internal dialogue that, you know, when you think of yourself as being a sick person, having this disease state, every cell in your body is listening to, I have a disease. I have this autoimmune disease. I have this, whatever the thing is. And if you're curious about whether or not that's actually true, if you ask yourself, well, what if I don't actually have lupus? What if my body was actually just trying to protect itself because I wasn't eating, I was eating too many inflammatory foods, and because I had a leaky gut, and because, you know, I, you know, wasn't sleeping enough, or I was over exercising, or what if this was just a normal response to the conditions I created for this body? And if then you're curious about it, then you can say, well, you can actually more easily, you know, play with that idea of, well, what if I just manipulate this one thing and see what happens? So that's how I try and, you know, even when stuff pops up here and there for myself, you know, I say, well, you know, like, I'm not going to spiral immediately, and the brain will trigger and say, oh my gosh, you know, like your big toe is hurting, you know, like that's one of those spots for me that, you know, when they're trying to figure out what I had and have this inflammation in my left big toe, you know, they're like, oh no, is this going to spiral? I'm going to not be able to walk on that foot in like 5 days, you know, if it doesn't go away. And like, you can have those thoughts. And then you can say, it's like, okay, or like, what did I do to create that inflammation right now? Did I eat something that maybe I shouldn't have? You know, did I overexercise? You know, what are the things? And then I can kind of work backwards from there and then use the supports that I know historically have worked to make that inflammation go back down.
And as you're just sharing there, I'm also curious if you think that trying too hard is a thing. So like sometimes I'll have like clients that like, I'm doing this really, really restrictive autoimmune paleo diet, and I'm taking all these supplements, and I'm doing X, Y, and Z. And do you think at that point in time, there can also be just like sometimes the person's not making progress because they're in such a state of stress, micromanaging?
Absolutely. And I'm totally guilty of that too. Totally did that. You know, you're like, more is better. Right? I'm doing the diet and doing all these supplements and all the things. Yeah, I absolutely think so. And that's part of having a good team member, you know, of talking that out. And I know you do the same thing as me. We have really long first interviews, right?
our first appointments, you know, we do back to back in order to get all the information to create something that's going to be most supportive. And part of that is getting to know the individual, right? Is to know where they are and to decide together, like, what's going to be the best balance for that person. Is just cutting out two food items, like where they are in their journey, is that going to give us the biggest bang for our buck? Then we start there. Be successful with that for a couple of weeks. Then let's add this one or two or three supplements. And then there's other people who are like, you know what? I did all of that. I did it really slow. I am just in a place where I want to do it all at once. I want to do the dietary stuff. I want to do the testing. I want to do the supplements or IVs, or I want to do saunas too. I want to do like a full program because I've never done that before. And then it's a conversation together what that's going to look like, you know, and then planning it all out so that it feels well balanced for that person. So I think always meeting the person where they're at is absolutely critical. And then reevaluating, because life is going to keep on happening, you know? So it was working for a handful of weeks or a couple months, but then, you know, life changes and there's a new work project or there's a child who's sick or there's, you know, whatever happens that, you know, you can't keep up that pace. But then to, again, have that gentleness towards self and saying, it's like, okay, it's time for a reevaluation of what I am doing and create more balance again, that there's kindness and love towards self, you know, in this very lengthy journey too.
And it is really complex and nuanced working with chronic cases. And it's like this delicate dance of doing the things that you need to do without trying too hard. And it's sometimes you're flip-flopping, you know, one side to the other, you know, it's not like a straight line.
Yeah. And, you know, and in particular, working with females, you know, who have cycles or are working towards getting their cycle back, like it can look very different just week one to week two and week two to week three and week three to week four, you know, and so adjusting the supplementation, adjusting your self-care, adjusting the nutrition, adjusting the rest, adjusting the activity based on that as well. But I'd also say what's really nice is not having to hold all of that mental load. And I think that's something that you and I both do for our clients, you know, beautifully. It's exhausting, but I think we also, you know, it's where we both excel. It is because we can hold on to like 15 different things at a time and say, you don't have to think about that. I'm just going to tell you week one, week two, week three, week four to what your focuses are on these three things, you know, or whatnot, because it is too much. It very much is. And that is how fabulously, you know, complex these human bodies are. They need a lot of adjustments potentially, you know, and whatnot for quite some time, but having not taking it all on by yourself and actually accepting the help is, I think, other part of it that I know I had a huge struggle with as a type A person for a very, very, very long time and whatnot. But I'm very grateful that I have worked on that to be able to have, you know, friends and have the supports in place that, you know, I can actually feel good about asking for help and support.
Yeah, I think that's also such an important part of the journey as well, is letting go a little bit enough to be able to allow yourself to receive the support. Mm-hmm. Because it's, I think for me, especially in my journey, it's just actually learning to be able to receive. And that there had to be like a full softening in my nervous system to feel safe enough to do that, which is not something that just happens overnight. You know, it happens with lots and lots of micro learnings over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what goes back to that. Like, where did you get that, right? Where did you get that lack of safety, you know, or not feeling safe in your own body or safe with other people, or the shame, you know, or guilt, you know, that it's associated with asking for or receiving help. Those are really big things that is very common amongst folks who are chronically ill. And that's where then, you know, the trauma work is a huge piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I could talk to you all day, but I know you've got a busy day ahead of you. I've had a busy day up until this interview. So I'm curious if there's kind of any kind of final words of wisdom or anything that you feel like it's really important to share today.
I guess, you know, just going back to that, you know, that kindness and gentleness with self. You know, if there was something that I could have done sooner for myself in my journey to healing, would be that I wish that I had known the importance of that, of creating that dialogue within my own body and with my own mind and safety within myself so that my body could heal. I wish I had added that to the milieu of things that I had been working on earlier on, because I think that piece is overlooked a lot.
Yeah.
So I am very proud of you for doing this work too, because, you know, boy, it's magic when you're able to put all those pieces together.
Yeah. And I mean, I think about the time when we worked together and also like how much I've grown in myself, especially from doing the SE training, and just like how you must have been so frustrated with me. Just like, I remember you telling me like, Anna, trust and surrender, trust and surrender. Like, your words are literally still in my head, but it really took a long time for me to really understand what that actually meant. And probably still don't even know just yet, but I think I know a little bit better than when we were first working together. And so just in terms of your business, and I'm sure there may be people stateside who are listening to this and curious about working with you and who you work with. So did you want to say a little bit more about that?
I'm sure. Oh, I'll keep it brief. Yeah. So I still work virtually here in the States. I'm based in California, but I work as a health and wellness coach all over. The types of folks that I work with, I do work with a number of people who struggle with fatigue, and fatigue then can be related to, obviously, autoimmunity. So I do still get a fair amount of people in that realm of conditions. But I also work with a lot of females who are interested in their balancing their hormones. And I work with a lot of folks who also are athletes in their own rights and have just had a decrease in their function or recovering from performances or competitions and whatnot. So those are the majority of the folks that I work with. And, you know, I see people both as one-off appointments. And then I also work by retainer for folks who are more interested in that continuous dialogue and bigger goals that are more long-term, 3, 6, 12 months, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Where can people find you? I know that you have an Instagram, but you don't even need to post on it anymore because you're too busy. So what is the best way for people to reach out and get in touch?
So yeah, I do have an Instagram. The content is quite old, but there's still some, you know, pertinent information on there anybody can go take a look at. I am the only Lacey Chittle, like, in the world, Dr. Lacey Chittle. So you can pretty much just Google my name and you'll find both my website and old interviews and my Instagram and all that sort of stuff. My website is just dr and then my name, LaceyChittle.com.
Thank you so much. Lacey, this has been maybe what, like 45-minute interview. I could have literally spoken to you for 2 hours or more. But thank you so much for sharing your time and your beautiful words of wisdom today. I'm sure there'll be many people who are inspired listening to you and your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna. It's a pleasure to be here with you.